Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here again for another week of Turning Towards Life. Lizzie, our 226th week,
Ooh.
I think. Welcome to you, Lizzie, and to me and to everyone, all of you who are here with us. Some of us, some of you are here with us live. We stream this live on Facebook every week. I think partly, Lizzie, what that does is it keeps it really alive and real as well, for us to know that we're with people in real time.
Yeah.
But we also know that many of you will be joining us at some other point in the history or the future of this planet, maybe on a podcast or on YouTube or on our website, which is turningtowards.life or something like that. And you're all so welcome. So welcome. And this is the 226th conversation in an unfolding practice that we have here, that you're included in simply by being with us and listening. So please feel yourself to be part of this conversation with us, where we will in a moment take up a wonderful source that you brought us, Lizzie, and both read it and then see what conversation unfolds together.
That's so sweet, Justin, you talking about us being here live, because I'm noticing in this moment one of the things that's a holding factor of us doing this is that people are expecting us to be here. If it was just like recordings, we could just say, oh, well, let's do that tomorrow, or let's do that. But the clockworkness is because people are here with us. So I'm now receiving the support of people who are with us live, and how much that contributes to us being here. I'm really grateful for that. Oh, so this week we have a poem by the wonderful David White, and it's called Sweet Darkness. And as you said, Justin, we're going to enter into this live and unrehearsed and see what comes between us, and how beautiful that that's our practice. So here we go. Sweet Darkness by David White. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your home tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds, except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you.
Thank you, Lizzie. So I'm going to read this too. Maybe if you're listening and you are in the middle of something, it might be just a moment, just a pause. There's something about reading something twice, isn't there, Lizzie, about when we've heard it once and then it comes again in a different voice and from a different body, and it can land in a whole new way.
Yeah.
And you can always, we always post either the source or a link to the source in our Facebook group and with the podcast notes and on our website. This is Sweet Darkness. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There, you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your home tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you.
Thanks, Justin. Oh, I'm just feeling anew the kind of radicalness of this invitation. And also the validation of the darkness that so many of us know. And certainly, for me, still and historically, I've been so afraid of the darkness. And so I need to be reminded all the time that the darkness has a place, that the darkness is this something that gives us a new horizon, a different horizon than we've been able to see before, rather than a place that we need to get rid of or a place that is bad. So I'm feeling really welcomed and like the importance of this message that the darkness is a place that's important, that's valid, that's needed, that's part of things. Of course, it logically makes sense. And yet there's something really frightening about it. And I'm reminded, Justin, sometimes we go swimming in the ocean quite far out, and when you look down, it looks like it's just dark. And of course, once you get under the water, the world, the horizon opens. But when you're on the boat and you have to go in, it just looks dark. And the kind of faith that it takes to plop off the side of the boat and go through the veil, which is the surface of the water, through into what looks like darkness. And yes, of course, the quality of light is different, but it's not complete darkness, which is why there can be a horizon. But it takes faith and trust and breathing and keeping on going towards it. And then the gifts of the different horizon are magnificent. But it feels frightening. And so to have a poem that's the invitation into it and talking about it so coherently feels very, very, very supportive of all the times that that's been what's needed. You know, he says sometimes it takes darkness and sometimes it doesn't and sometimes it does. And when it does, how wonderful that we have a reference point that says it's okay to be here and there are gifts here and there will be new horizons that get shown because you are here, rather than get out as quickly as you can, never come here, this is bad, do everything you can to avoid it. It's not that. And many times you can't avoid it. And so we need to find a way to be in it.
I'm really appreciating that way of speaking about it, Lizzie, particularly when you talked about how something might look from one angle and how it might look from another, and the passing through the veil of what just looks like the dark. And I'd never seen this. This poem has been very, very close to me for a very long time. It's a very important poem in my life. And your way of talking about it is awakening in me this sense that sometimes the very thing that we're doing our best to get away from, sometimes what we think our fear, we feel fear. I certainly know I do. I feel fear, and what fear might have me do is to turn away from the very something which has the horizons in it that are further than I can see. So I have lots of fear often in my body, and I interpret it in one very particular way. I think I've been interpreting it for a long time as something is wrong. So when I feel afraid, what I have to do is I have to do whatever I can to make the fear vanish, because to really be in the fear means being in the something that's wrong. And the invitation here is that the fear is a portal, can be, sometimes can be. That's the way to talk about it, isn't it? That it sometimes can be a doorway into a way bigger world, and that it might be an invitation.
Yeah.
It might be something that's saying, come this way, because if you're prepared to get yourself on the underside of it, the night will give you a horizon further than you can see. And that might be one. It's really hard to talk about in a way. I think David White has done this beautiful job of untangling something that is otherwise very tangly. And I'm going to do my best to try and say this. That I suppose I'll say it this way, that I notice in hearing you and feeling what that evokes in me, that I take my fear and the darkness that is in it as it's easy for me to take it as an instruction to collapse into the constraints of my existing life and my way of being it. Like, I'm feeling this way because somehow I'm not living this life exactly the way I'm meant to live it. But that's actually not what I'm afraid of. The fear is not that. The fear is actually the thing that's on the underside of it, which is the fear that comes from not having yet answered the question fully, what is the one world to which I belong and could I live in it?
Yeah.
So it's almost like, actually, the way you were talking about it, about the veil on the surface of the ocean, that we, when we approach it from one side, it looks like the thing to do is to stay out of it. And then from the other side, we can see that what it was calling us to do was to be in it, that the very same feeling was the invitation into the depth that we were bouncing off.
Yes.
So hence the night will give us a horizon sometimes further that we can see.
Mm. Oh my goodness. The way that you were talking just then, I could really feel that surface, if we're using this kind of metaphor of the ocean, having that surface be an invitation rather than a stay out is a completely different way to relate to process, to the way that the process of our lives, the unfolding of our lives happens. And I know so many times I've seen that surface and have gone, oh, that's not where I'm, that's like the forbidden land. I can't go there. That's too scary. That's not mine. And I've just completely bounced off of it and bounced away. And sometimes I just don't have the stomach for it, if you know what I mean. Sometimes I'm like, I can't do that right now. I just can't. I haven't got the resources inside of me to face into something. And such a different feeling for me to go, oh, that's an invitation. I've been interpreting it really differently. But that's an invite, not a barricade kind of thing. That's so beautiful. And also this whole thing about which world do I belong in? You know, just in doing this with you, being here, is such a profound representation of the world in which I feel like I belong. And what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And how curious is that? We're just sitting here having a conversation, talking to one another. And yet that feels like a stronger picture than anything of where I belong in terms of what my work is in the world, what I was destined for, or what I was put here for, which is also really different to all of the stories I've ever imagined for myself about what I'm here for. Like, I didn't think I'd like sit here having conversations and feel at home like this. So it's also so curious what is, you know, those worlds in which we belong have the possibility of being completely different to what we had ever imagined for ourselves. So this this line, "This world was made to be free in," it's like it's giving us a, I don't know what the word is, maybe like a radar or something, like some discerning factor, like where I'm receiving it as where I feel free might be where I belong. So how can I discern my belonging in my freedom and then decide that's what I'm going to do with myself? So this question of what's my life for isn't answered by something conceptual or something outside of me, but it can be answered by my experience of when I feel free and when I feel like I belong. What if I follow that? What if I sniff that out and keep doing it? Which in some way is this. If I keep turning up on a Sunday morning, and if I keep talking, and if I keep looking and allowing myself to be moved by things in the world, and keep following, faithfully stepping, even though it's not obvious or defined, but it always feels like new territory. And then I get to make repeated moves in that way, that by the very fact that I'm moving in that way gives up other worlds. Because what I'm saying yes to is also simultaneously saying no to something else. And if my yeses are my freedom and my belonging, that feels really hopeful.
I love this place that you just got into, Lizzie, that our freedom and our giving up, our saying no to things, are inextricably bound into one another. And there's something here very important about the role that darkness and shadow plays in it. I think one of the troubles that we have, many of us, is that we, without knowing it, we are born into a culture, certainly the predominant culture of the wider place that you and I live in, Lizzie, in this part of the world and in many parts of the world, is very, very strongly oriented towards having everything being in the blazing light. I can see where I'm going. I know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I can map everything out. I can have smart goals for the future. I can have everything in my grasp. And it's I think we've taken up the everything ought to be nameable and identifiable and plannable and choosable and visible. And if it's not any of those things, and so interesting, the current, I think, cultural trend of our times is for buildings to be lit very brightly. Homes are lit very brightly. Public spaces are lit very brightly. Very rarely walk into a public space and find that there's deep shadow.
Yeah.
But in some cultures there is. Homes can have shadow and public spaces can have shadow. And so we don't, many of us, swim in a wider culture that honors, first of all, it honors that our freedom to see everything and then to choose from everything and to make sense of everything is predominant. And the mystery of the shadow. And in order to do that, what you just said, which is to find where we belong, seems to me that, and to find, as David White invites us, to find out who and what really brings us alive.
Mm.
It seeming to me more and more, it does take this move of taking up practice and conversation and relationship, experimenting to find the places, seeing if we can find out what belonging feels like and means. And it may be completely other than what we're expecting and with other people than who we're expecting it to be. And that might be part of the role of darkness in it, is that it's not really plannable. And that's part of the trap that the fearful parts of me get into, which is stay away from the dark. That's what I take the fear to mean. Stay away from the dark, because you cannot know what will happen if you go that way. Maybe everything you've planned will come apart. Maybe everything you've said will is important will come apart. Well, maybe it will. Mm-hmm. Which is why I have carried this poem around for many years, particularly these lines. Anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know about you, Lizzie, but how often, in the same way that you invited us to turn upside down and inside out our sense of what might be afraid of, how often what I'm running from or have been running from is exactly that in which I feel fully sized in my life, alive in my life. It's very often different to what anybody else would expect of me and different to what I've expected of myself. So I feel the fear of being the one who is brought alive either by how I am with what I'm ready with, or shifting so I can be in practices and with people that really bring me alive, is kind of scary.
Mm.
And maybe that's why we need the night, to teach us that the feeling of feeling afraid is telling us, is reminding us about this, to move towards it rather than to run away from it.
Mm. Yeah, gosh. I love what you're saying, where everything, culturally, everything has to be in the light. And it occurred to me that if you want to do something, it also has to be showable to other people. So be obvious to them too. But of course, following something that's barely a flame, where you can barely see it, but you can feel it. You can't really do a PowerPoint on it and show it to somebody. It's and as you say, it's often so unexpected and so unfamiliar. So it can't be in the light until it can be. So I'm feeling really honouring of all of the, like when you see a film, how much has gone into that to get onto the screen and distributed and into someone's living room or to the cinema or something. The majority of the happening is unseen, and the scene is like tiny. And yet that piece that's seen isn't even seeable unless everything in the behind, in the dark, is done, is made. So I'm feeling really honouring of all of the things we've done, all of the things anyone else listening has done, all of the steps anyone's taken that no one else has seen, all the parenting that people do in the moments where it's just you and a child, bath times and food and nothingy kind of everythingy moments. And likewise, with any endeavor, with anything we're doing, so much of what happens to make something happen is in the dark, isn't in the light. And I think it's making me think of there's in work as well, there's this culture of, you know, anything that you get paid for example, has to be seen, has to be visible, has to be delivered. The delivery is the thing. So we're equating economically, we're equating delivery with value. Like the value isn't placed in the darkness where the idea got born and where the creation happened. The value is only in the end product. And I think that's what we do to ourselves as well. If I'm not the end product, I don't have the value. So I'm really appreciating the depth of the value in everything that's unseen. Everything that's that's kind of under the radar, that's happening in the soup of our being, that's not turned into a product or a something else. Just feeling really profoundly moved by the whole of that. And I know Justin, like our life at Third Space is like that. there's so much birthing of things and so much wondering and thinking and talking, and well before anything is showable to the world. And I'm really feeling the depth of value of that, both as a kind of personal process, but also with anything that happens in the world as well.
Gosh. The honouring of the underneath and the behind and the dark and that what can't be put into language. And I was thinking whilst you were talking, there are some things I'd like people to have PowerPoint presentations and spreadsheets about. Me too. If you're going to build me an aeroplane or a bridge or something, like, please don't just rely on, well, there's something mysterious. This is going to hold this bridge up. Like, I'd like things to be brought into the light. That would be very helpful. Thank you. But the mistake is that we let that colonize all of our lives. Mm-hmm. Our work. Not, like you said, not everything in work that's of value in the work of humans can be laid out and brought into the light and given language. And I wonder if that's why, you know, one of the things you and I have spoken a lot about, Lizzie, and that we've just included in teaching it. We're doing this, well, you know this, but I'm saying this for everyone else, that we're right in the middle of our professional coaching course today. And so we've stepped out to have this conversation, you and I. And we've been talking about different kinds of conversations and the difference between conversations that make a relationship and conversations that are for action and for having things happen, and that many of us only ever really experience conversations for action in our working lives and sometimes in our home lives. And yeah. Because those are the conversations which bring something into the light. You're going to do this, Lizzie, and I'm going to do this, and it's going to be done by then. And we've pushed away into the margins the kinds of conversations in which the dark and the unknown, the sweet darkness is present, which is where we find out how we belong. Mm-hmm. And we find out what really calls to us, and we find out how we're connected, but also where we are with one another in a way that's beyond words, our being together, all the implicit that we talked about a few weeks ago is here.
Mm.
And that's all in the shadows. So maybe it's no surprise that in order to find out maybe it's no surprise as reading David White's poem in a new way, that our eyes get tired and the world gets tired because of this, because and our vision is gone, because many of us are not having the opportunity to go into the dark,
mm-hmm.
to be in the unknown and the undergrowth and the unspoken and the unspeakable and the unseeable of our own lives and our lives with one another, what it feels like to be together, or the great long stirrings of longing and story that are in us.
Mm. My goodness, this feels like such a big old something. It's so sweet to be able to kind of tease a little bit of this out, because of course so much of this is coming from that dark place, you know, of the kind of wanderings and musings and imaginings and experiencing which doesn't ever get told or shared. And so I'm just feeling really grateful to David for the kind of being that he is, that bringing these words to the human experience is quite something really beautiful. And this big invitation of anyone or anything that does not bring you alive is too small for you. I mean, how great to have a set of some things that go, well, this is a criteria by which I could live. Is this bringing me alive? Or is this not bringing me alive? How amazing.
And am I bringing, goes both ways. So is it bringing me alive? Also, am I letting myself bring myself with enough of my own belonging? Am I enough of the own underneath that can't be said, and enough of my own aliveness that what I'm already here, who I'm with? Can I be with you, Lizzie, who I love and care about and want to be in this conversation with so deeply? Can I be with you in a way that brings me alive, so this conversation is not too small for me?
Yes.
as well as looking for somewhere else to have a conversation that may be alive. That's none of it can be collapsed down to what's obvious.
That's
where I'm left for today.
Thank you, Justin, for this lovely time together, and thank you, David. I know that some people from David White's work listen to us, and just to say a warm welcome, if you are a David White person and you're here, we're very grateful that you're here and very happy to have you. And we will be back next week, next Sunday again, live here. And just to say thank you for being in support of us, for being here. And thank you, Justin, for doing this every time. It's really wonderful. We'll see you next week.